Good afternoon and welcome to Power for the People here on Solar Power WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill in Bangor and streaming everywhere in our solar system at weru.org. I'm your host, Steve Kahl. The overarching goal of Power for the People is exactly that, to educate and empower you to make a difference in your own life around energy issues and around your energy costs, and to educate and empower you to make a difference for society and for the environment. Today's program is an update for our listeners on about energy legislation pending right now in the current Maine legislature. This is a short legislative session, which wraps up in April, so there's a short time frame here. And my expert guest today is Jack Shapiro, the Climate and Energy Clean Energy Director at the Natural Resource Council of Maine. Welcome, Jack. Appreciate you being here on Power for the People with me once again. Welcome.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks. I do certainly appreciate it. And this is exactly a timely thing to do for us in this program to get this information out to the listening public. So give us a really quick overview of the role of the Natural Resource Council of Maine and your part of the NRCM mission.
Yeah. Thanks so much. So as your listeners may or may not know, NRCM is one of Maine's oldest and largest environmental groups. We've been around since 1959, and our mission is to protect, conserve, and restore Maine's environment. And my role leading the Climate and Clean Energy Program really comes from the growing recognition that unless we deal with the climate, with the issue of climate change, which, as we have seen really clearly in the last few years in particular, is one of the largest threats to our woods and waters and wildlife, our coasts and our communities, you know, we can't really meaningfully do that work of protecting Maine's environment. So what we work on in my program is increasing our supplies of clean, renewable energy, reducing our dependence on fossil fuels and all the costs as well as pollution that come with that, as well as working to make our buildings more energy efficient and less polluting, and to clean up and diversify our transportation system, because you know, fully half of Maine's emissions come from transportation. So that's a little bit about what we do.
Well, and I just have to comment, based on having done this program now for, I guess I'm in my 11th year, and related very much to what you just said, is that Maine is doing a pretty good job and I will editorialize here in a federal environment that is increasingly challenging. I don't think that's particularly controversial to say. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that I've been a member of NRCM since the mid-1980s and have been pleased to be so. So there are two bills that are specifically in your arena there. And there's actually three bills that I would like to specifically talk about, and we'll see if we get through those. There may be some other things that we can touch on a little bit briefly. But I think let's start with LD 237, which is something that I think may fly under the radar for many people in the state, but is very important to citizens of the state of Maine, and that's keeping Maine in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. So tell us, again, that we can overcomplicate that one. Let's see how we can simplify it. So take it away for the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, better known as REGGI, which I'm sure we will say many times in the next few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. We'll go ahead and abbreviate it as REGGI in the interest of time. But what REGGI is, it's a multi-state effort to reduce carbon pollution, the pollution that causes climate change, from the biggest fossil fuel powered power plants. And the way that it works is, you know, before REGGI, power plants could pollute for free, this kind of pollution. And so under REGGI, the polluting power plants have to basically buy a permit for every ton of pollution that they create. And those permits are auctioned off by the various states. And then all of the money comes back into the state to do with as each state sees fit. So mostly these are northeastern states. Maine has been a part of REGGI since the beginning. And part of standing up REGGI in Maine back in the sort of 2008 era was part of creating the Efficiency Maine Trust. So I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of Efficiency Maine. RGGI funding has been a really important source of resources for Efficiency Maine and has funded a lot of the home weatherization, insulation improvements, and heat pump and electrification programs that have helped people save on energy costs over the past bunch of years. And just to put that in perspective a little bit, between 2009 and 2024, Maine received a total of about $250 million as a RGGI participant. So what LD 2037 does is it adopts the most recent update to the RGGI program that the states, and state leadership has been sort of working on, agreeing on for a while. It basically sets how much emissions will sort of be allowed, how many permits will be sold. By adopting LD 2037, we'll continue to be part of the program and we'll continue to reap the benefits, sort of seeing more of what we want, efficiency funding, and less of what we don't want, which is climate pollution.
Well, thank you for that summary. That was a really good summary. From my perspective, this is a version of a cap and trade program. If any of your listeners out there might happen to know what that is, that cap and trade program basically solved the acid rain problem back 20 years ago. Something that I was closely involved with. And if you, it, for me, if you think about it, acid rain was a hemispheric issue, the northern hemisphere, Europe and the U.S. Climate change is the global version of acid rain, if you will. And so this is just a logical way to, yes, utilities have to buy permits to emit CO2, but that creates an incentive for them to not continue to emit CO2 at the same rate that they have. And the good news for that, the benefit coming out of it is what you just said, that has been over $250 million consumers returned, sorry, returned to consumers just in Maine, not even counting the other 9 or 10 states that are there. This
Yeah,
should
that's
go ahead.
exactly right. I think I the sort of two other things I would just add to that is, across all of the RGGI states, the economic benefits are like closer to $6 billion. Maine is actually a relatively small state compared to some of the other participants, Massachusetts, New York, some of these other states. But the benefits are sort of proportional as well. But I think the other thing that's really important for people to understand is that when we make an investment in energy efficiency, when Efficiency Maine sort of helps someone insulate their home, that benefits that family that lives in that house or that business who makes an equipment upgrade. But it also means that when we see a cold snap like we did in just the past couple of weeks, that's a lower level of demand that the whole system has to hit. So it not only those investments not only benefit individual families and businesses, they actually benefit all of us. Our friends at the Acadia Center did a quick analysis of this most recent cold snap, and they found that the energy efficiency investments that have been made across New England over the past few years were generating about $1 million an hour in value in avoided additional system costs for, what otherwise would be, another oil burning power plant coming on during those cold hours. So just to give a sense of scale, and just also an understanding that these really benefit everybody, these investments,
That's right.
not just the buildings that they're going into.
Right. And I'll add a couple of anecdotes from my own situation. So I live in a 1948 house that was poorly insulated when I bought it and burned oil. The previous owner, I did look into this, the previous owner spent $3,000 to $3,500 a year in oil alone. That doesn't even include the electricity. So my house is 100% electric now, and my energy bill last year was $1,400. That's more than 50% or 600%, as Trump would say. And the other part of it, I did a project in when I lived in New Hampshire for using some efficiency money from their Efficiency Maine equivalent. And basically created a place with solar power that actually was generating more energy than it used. But the thing that I want to mention is the people who worked there raved about how comfortable it was. And so, you know, there's the social benefits that you just say, there's the cost savings, and there's the comfort issue, which in the recent cold snap we have is just so important, no question about it. So LD 2037, keeping Maine in the current edition of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, should be pretty non-controversial unless people are just not paying attention, it seems to me. And I will say here, and this is me stating facts, not stating opinion, similar legislation when I was living in New Hampshire came up. And while the Republicans all said, we realize that we get net benefit out of this, we just basically don't believe in alternative energy. So we're going to vote no. Fortunately, it did barely pass. But this is, you know, if you know somebody in the legislature, you know, keep in mind that that this could fail and it could wind up costing the state of Maine a lot of money. And you yourself, you know, if you were doing energy upgrades to your home, it could cost you as well. All right. I think that's pretty good on that. You want to add anything else there? Well, let me just ask, what are the expectations for passage?
Yeah, well, as we're recording, the Reggie bill did pass the House earlier this week. Like you said, unfortunately, it was a party line vote. Even though, you know, because we have a regional electricity grid, Maine exiting the Reggie program wouldn't actually benefit us at all. It would not lower costs at all. All it would do is sort of throw away the additional investments that we get from being part of the program. But despite that being the case, it was a party line vote coming out of the House. And as we're recording, it's actually on the Senate calendar today. We could have good news in just the next few hours on Reggie getting through both chambers. But I think it is really important that you know, there's a lot of polarization, unfortunately, around climate and clean energy issues. And so if any of your listeners are folks that do support cleaning up our electricity system or reducing our energy costs by getting us off expensive fossil fuels, which, you know, again, is the primary driver of our high electricity costs, is our dependence on natural gas as a fuel in the in power plants across the region. To really make your voice heard, you know, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your legislators, because there's a really motivated opposition who really wants people to believe that somehow energy sources that have no fuel costs are somehow more expensive, which really is just not the case. And certainly is not the case. You know, if that maybe was the case, you know, 50 years ago when these were brand new, it's certainly not the case now when we've seen, you know, just incredible cost reductions across these renewable energy technologies, not just here in the United States, but all around the world.
Right. And I mean, as you just said, just to reiterate it, there's no cost, additional cost to us if this doesn't pass. There are big time losses in terms of cost sharing and weatherization things. You know, 45% of the legislature is willing to vote against it. I guess it's all about their belief that the oil companies need bigger profits. Not that I have an opinion. All right, so that takes care of Reggie. And I will just mention that because Reggie does have major funding for Efficiency Maine. I do have, I think regular listeners will know, I do have staff from Efficiency Maine on this program typically once a year to update what the current cost sharing opportunities and rebates are with Efficiency Maine so that everybody knows. Those, I can't even keep up with that one. So you're listening to Power for the People here on WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill and in Bangor with expert guest today, Jack Shapiro, the Climate and Clean Energy Director of the Natural Resources Council of Maine, located in Augusta. All right, so the next one is LD 1870, which is the Climate Superfund, which is also not simple compared to as Reggie wasn't. And as I understand it, several states and numerous countries, in fact, have already passed similar bills that basically hold fossil fuel companies accountable for greenhouse gas warming and environmental impacts that come from their emissions. And I will say, if you don't mind, Jack, here, because this does sound a little bit complicated, I suppose. To me, this is basic environmental economics that I used to teach in my classes when I was teaching this sort of thing. And the example that I'll use, I mean, environmental externality is what the Natural Resource Council, Natural Resource Economics would call it. And hopefully you don't mind this simple example. But paper mills dumped pollutants in the main rivers for decades or centuries. And it helped them increase their profits because they weren't responsible for for pollution controls or for cleaning things up. And so what that meant was, here's the externality part of it, Maine taxpayers had to pay the bill. Well, how fair is that? It doesn't make any sense. But that's where society was for many years. I think Maine paper mills are not doing a bad job today, so I don't want to cast them in that light today. But historically, that's what it was. And I think I'll say, and you can react if you like otherwise, Jack, that this is analogous to the Climate Superfund issue. So take that away, LD 1870.
Yeah, no, I think the, you know, it could even be simpler than a college level explanation, to the point where it's a kindergarten level explanation, which is if you make a mess, you have to clean it up. What the Climate Superfund bill does is it calculates the amount of damages that climate change has caused in Maine during a certain time period, roughly the last several decades. And it also determines which of the world's largest fossil fuel companies. So these are ones like BP and Exxon, largely ones that viewers have heard of, maybe some refiners and coal companies. And if they've done business in Maine, they have a responsibility to help Maine taxpayers pay for the damages that have come from climate change and the investments that are needed to make our communities and our infrastructure more resilient to the impacts of climate change, like increased flooding, like we've seen in the past several years, or sea level rise and coastal storms, even things like droughts and heat waves, which can have really serious economic and health impacts as well. So I think this is a, the reason why these bills are happening now. You know, you mentioned that other states and in other jurisdictions, they're working on these legislations. The sort of tragic truth about why these bills are coming forward now is because the science of understanding what climate impacts are coming from which sources of pollution and making that link is now possible because we have seen more climate change and climate damages. It gives scientists and researchers enough data to be able to sort of affirmatively make those kinds of attributions. And those kinds of attributions, I think, lead directly to a responsibility. And I think it shouldn't be lost on anyone that, these are some of the most profitable countries or profitable companies in the history of the world. And, we're not coming to it from a place that like all profit is bad. But as you said, Steve, if that profit is being done at the expense of someone else, where there's someone else who's having to pick up the bill, well, then there should be some sense of responsibility and help for, Maine taxpayers and communities to be able to expect some kind of help in funding those to repair those damages and make those kinds of infrastructure investments that we need.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think there are some people out there who are opponents to even using the phrase climate change. I mean, in fact, when Governor LePage was in, we had to remove the word climate change from state documents because it wasn't in their allowed language. And again, I don't think this is a controversial statement, but most of the opponents who are opposing these sorts of things, their campaigns are funded by the fossil fuel companies. Let's just be right up front about that. And there have been numerous 1,000-year floods, not just in Maine, but around the globe. The Stonington waterfront was destroyed last summer, last fall, whenever it was, practically their working waterfront. And who's paying the bill? Well, it's mostly it's taxpayers. If FEMA ever continues to supply some stuff, that's still taxpayer, or it's Maine taxpayers, as the case may be. So to me, again, this is not rocket science. It's lots of other states, countries, and maybe even cities are doing it. And I think your summary is well taken. What do you think the expectations are for passage for that are, and where are we in that role?
Yeah, I think this one is one where it's a little less further along than the Reggie bill, which we just talked about. So I think this one is really ripe for legislators to hear from their constituents about. If you have or your community has experienced any climate related extreme weather or storm impacts, please get in touch with your legislator and let them know that Maine's communities, Maine's taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook all by themselves to pay for this problem when there were, some of the world's biggest companies that knew that their products caused climate change. There's a very, very well known example where ExxonMobil's own scientists were writing internal reports to their senior leadership saying the carbon pollution that comes from burning oil and gas will create this additional warming in the atmosphere, which will lead to these kinds of impacts. They knew this was happening. And instead of taking responsibility for it, instead of shifting their business model, instead they invested in some of the famous climate denial campaigns throughout the 1990s and early 2000s to make sure that there was not public policy to shift us away from these earlier. And there's a direct link between the delay that caused, the increased emissions that are in the atmosphere now, today, and the damages that we saw, whether that's 60% of Maine's working waterfronts damaged or destroyed in the 2023-2024 storms, the increased electric bills that Mainers are paying to help pay to repair the damages from those storms, the road washouts that occurred, even the people that were killed in just those storms alone. So I think it's really important that we hold these polluters accountable for the damages that they've caused in Maine. And if you agree, call your legislator.
That's perfect information there. And in fact, I had in my notes here to say that it was Exxon scientists in the 1970s were telling their leadership that increased emissions were going to change the climate. Clearly Exxon was actively denying or covering up that kind of information for decades. And I will say too, this is factual. It's not me stating an opinion. I mean, Trump pulled the oil company people into his office, whatever it was before the election, and said, if you give me $1 billion, I will roll back regulations. And that's where we're at. And I don't think anybody's trying to hide. That's clearly where we're at. All right, we're down to maybe 3 minutes here. And so we've covered the ones that were high on your agenda. There's one other one that I did want to bring up, and I'm looking for my notes here on it. And it is, not that I'm finding my notes, but it is the one for plug-in solar.
Yes.
And this is something that I followed, and we've not brought up on this program on Power for the People, but it's something where millions of these have been sold in Europe, where people can buy two or three or four solar panels, have an inverter attached to the panels, because panels produce direct current. The inverter converts it to alternating current, and you literally just buy it from a hardware store, not in Maine yet, and you plug it in, and it produces reduces your electric bill by 5 to 10%. Tell me where you think that one might be at, And I'm looking on my notes here for the LD number for that one.
I got you, Steve. If there's anything I know at this point in the session, it's the LD number. So you're referring to LD 1730. It's sponsored by Senator Nicole Grahowski from Ellsworth. And what this bill would do was basically create a new category in state regulation for these really small scale solar systems. So you don't necessarily need all the things that go on when you do a rooftop solar system, like a formal interconnection agreement with the utility. These are much more low barrier, as you mentioned, for people to use. I think these are great. These are great ways for renters, for example, who aren't going to make a huge investment on a house that they're living in, or for other folks who maybe don't have that kind of ability to make some of those investments to get involved in solar. I think it's one of the things that's going to be really important is they have a higher voltage electricity system in Europe. So we're trying to make sure that we get the certifications and the safety pieces right. These generate about as much electricity as like a toaster or a hairdryer or microwave uses. But that being said, you don't want to plug a toaster or hairdryer in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I, just we're excited about these. We also want people to make sure they're sort of reading the label, and making sure that they're, plugging them in appropriately. But it's a really exciting way for more people to participate in solar and even just sort of directly power some of their own life with free clean energy from the sun.
Right. And as you mentioned, the sponsor there is Senator Grahowski from Ellsworth in our listening area and has been a guest on this program as well. As you say, there are, but there, this requir it was actually approved in Utah first here in the U.S., a far right-wing red state. And apparently, things have done very well out there in terms of popularity. So that's something to keep an eye on, the possibility. So it's called balcony solar in Europe. I think we're calling it plug-in solar here. And again, it's a relatively low cost. And again, just something that you plug in. So keep in mind that. And one thing I've been pleased to, been amused to read about for plug-in solar, people are calling it the entry-level drug for people's interest in going solar longer term. So that sounds like a good thing to me. All right. Well, Jack, we are out of time, but I certainly do appreciate you being on. You have been listening to Power for the People here on WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill and in Bangor, with guest Jack Shapiro, the Climate and Clean Energy Director for the Natural Resource Council of Maine. Power for the People airs the fourth Friday of every month in the Public Affairs time slot at 4:30 p.m. Join us next time to learn more about energy topics, policies, technology, and solutions for your life. Again, thanks again, Jack.
Thanks for having me.